Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Healthcare is constantly undergoing change. New discoveries, new treatments, and system-wide quality improvements. Under the Affordable Care Act, hospitals and doctors are being pushed as never before to both measure and improve upon the quality of the care they deliver to patients and to be more conscious of cost in the process. It's well known that in the U.S. we collectively spend nearly 20% of our gross domestic product on healthcare goods and services alone, which comprise an enormous and ever-growing part of the economy. The next closest nations spend about half what we do and achieve better aggregate outcomes. My guest today, Dr. David Kendrick, has been at the heart of the discussion about quality measurement to create improvement in medicine. As both a practicing physician and an informaticist, Kendrick's purview includes the growing adoption and use of electronic means to capture patient data and analyze it in more sophisticated ways. In perhaps his most remarkable achievement to date, Kendrick has founded a nonprofit coalition of doctors and hospitals called the My Health Access Network, a Tulsa-based company that provides data analytics to healthcare providers throughout Oklahoma and even the rest of the nation. David Kendrick is an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the OU School of Community Medicine and CEO of the My Health Access Network. He joins us today in studio at Studio Tulsa on Health. David Kendrick, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. Thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
I wanted to start by asking you to tell us in layman's terms about My Health. Let's say I'm a patient and I'm going to see Dr. Smith, and Dr. Smith participates in My Health. What should I expect as a patient?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think in many situations, all the changes that are going on in healthcare are not well described from the patient perspective. And so I think you've asked exactly the right initial question, which is, what's going to be different for a patient? The My Health Project really began with a group of doctors, hospitals, clinics, even insurers coming together to say, what's wrong with health in our community and what can we do to improve it? And it turns out that a lot of the things that were wrong with health in our community have to do with not necessarily having medications available or having enough hospital beds, but really just to do with the way we shared information and whether or not the doctor seeing the patient actually knew what they needed to know to treat the patient right. And it turns out that in many cases, and in fact a shocking number of cases, patients go to see doctors who don't have a full medical record on the patient, who are missing the information from an emergency room visit or from a hospitalization that maybe occurred across town. And so for patients who go to see a My Health Access Network doctor, that is a doctor who's a member of the My Health Project, that doctor will have access to the records from a recent hospitalization or from emergency room visits that may have happened in the recent past. And the idea here is that if we don't have complete information on a patient when we see them, we can make mistakes. We can, not because we don't know enough about medicine, but simply because we don't know enough about this patient's specific medicines. We might prescribe something that they're already on, just with a different brand name. We might give them something that they're allergic to but aren't aware and don't tell us. And so by having the full information available in the patient visit, a My Health doctor actually is able to deliver comprehensive care in a single visit rather than having to request records from all over town and hope that those arrive and so forth.
So Dr. Jones, who I used to see, is not a participant in My Health. How did Dr. Jones get my records when I was at the emergency room or I was in a hospital when I was traveling in eastern Oklahoma?
So Dr. Jones usually doesn't get those records. The fact of the matter is today Dr. Jones is simply having to ask you the question, can you tell us what happened in the visit? Can you tell us all the medicines you were given? Can you tell us what kinds of suture that was used and how long they were supposed to be in? And those things are not necessarily things that patients need or shouldn't have to keep up with. It's complicated stuff.
So one thing that this brings to mind is who actually owns the medical record? I mean, we have a longstanding expectation that the doctor or the doctor's office is the repository of our records. And I'm understanding that more and more of the time, doctors under healthcare reform are now using computers to store these records. So shouldn't they be more readily available?
Well, it's a law called the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act that was passed in the late 90s. It's in full effect now, and it's very clear that the medical record is owned by the patient, and the patient can dictate the use of that record. That said, there are practical realities to the medical record that warrant the physician keeping a copy of the record in their office. It's sort of like when you buy a new car, and the dealer has already laid out a maintenance plan for that car, and they tell you what to do at 10,000 miles and at 20,000 miles and at 30,000 miles, and you're made aware of those things in advance, and it is indeed your car, and you own the records to that car, but the dealer helps you keep up with it and make sure you know. In fact, sometimes gives you a phone call reminder when it's time for the next checkup, so to speak, or the next oil change. And this is finally bringing healthcare into that era where where your physicians can work together, even though maybe they don't work in the same office. Your cardiologist is across town in a different location from your gastroenterologist or your primary care provider. This is a project that brings those providers together so that virtually they can work together and coordinate your care better, which is really what will benefit health the most.
So one understanding that I have of My Health is that you were able to get many of the different providers, hospitals, and doctors' offices to participate. And I look at that as somewhat of a major political achievement. Can you talk a little bit about how you were able to get so many, really, in essence, competitors together coordinating in this coalition?
Well, I think it's both a political and a business challenge, as you indicate. And it turns out, though, that participants in the healthcare system are in that industry for a reason. And that overarching reason is they want to help people. They want people to get healthier. They want our society, our community to be a healthier place to live. And so with that driving influence, we basically adopted that as a central rallying point for the community, and we built a table around which everybody could participate. So the My Health Project really began in 2008 with a meeting convened by the mayor, and about 70 healthcare leaders from around the community were invited. And at that meeting, we looked at some of the sobering statistics about our community's health. It showed that we had the highest age-adjusted death rate in the nation, which meant we were a civilization in reverse. Essentially, our children were not expected to live as long as we are. We noticed a 14-year difference in life expectancy just across Tulsa County from one zip code to another. And so these kinds of statistics were really just unacceptable, and everybody could agree to that, no matter whether they were an insurance company or a physician's office or a big health system. It was completely unacceptable to have a community as vibrant as Tulsa is and as we want it to become, to have such horrible health outcomes. And so what emerged from that initial meeting was an agreement. We basically put a charter in place, and that charter was a commitment of those providers, those various stakeholders, to invest in a 100-day planning process where we got together and we agreed on the most important things we could do to improve health in the community. And they were open meetings, and they were held, essentially the mayor's office hosted these meetings. And we spent that time to come up with a strategic plan for how we could work together. But there are a lot more forces involved in this than simply we want to do good for the community. There were external forces like the Affordable Care Act and the impending rise of healthcare reform, along with, at that time, directly, was the stimulus legislation. And both of those tended to move healthcare in a new direction, which was to begin paying for outcomes, paying for quality in healthcare. And to pay for outcomes in healthcare, that means essentially it's not good enough just to see patients in the office and then bill for an office visit. If I haven't done something as a physician to improve the patient's health, then what has the patient gained other than half a day out of work to go see me? So the concept there is that we knew that healthcare itself, the industry, was changing and moving in a direction to where it was going to be quality that people were paying for, not just the quantity of office visits that occurred. And so in an effort to prepare our community for that, our healthcare community for that, we began working together on this project in earnest. And the basic idea was, when Medicare comes out with a new program, for example, they now have a program on a 30-day hospital readmission. So for patients who are discharged from the hospital with certain diagnoses who wind up coming back to the hospital within 30 days, Medicare very soon will consider that to be a problem, a quality issue. And so they'll begin refusing to pay for those readmissions to the hospital. The idea being that the hospital that had admitted them initially should have done everything they could to make sure that they landed at home safely, that they had a follow-up visit with a primary care provider, they got the care management that they needed to not have to come back to the hospital. And so with those kinds of things in mind, it became clear, I think, to our health systems, to our individual practices, and to the insurers and certainly the corporations in this community, that the only way we were really going to get ahead of the coming changes in healthcare was if we began to work together to make sure that no matter where a patient presented for care, we had the right information to deliver comprehensive care to them and to help them make the right decisions for their own health.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today is Dr. David Kendrick, an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the OU School of Community Medicine and the CEO of My Health Access Network here in Tulsa, a nonprofit devoted to improving communication and quality in healthcare. And Dr. Kendrick, you mentioned, or at least I previously asked you about the political challenge to which you spoke articulately, but in fact, what really springs to mind is that it's more of almost like a diplomatic mission In other words, you had a high-stakes summit, like a United Nations, as it were, here in Tulsa. And this was actually before I lived here, so I'm fascinated to hear this very recent history. But this task force, as it was, convened by the mayor. And I should say that, as you mentioned, these meetings were open to the public. So I suspect that you had members of the public, patients themselves, who participated in the process and had their voices heard?
Absolutely, we did. And I think the use of the term diplomatic mission is exactly right, because even prior to that meeting, we made visit to a number of the healthcare leaders in the community and said, you know, if we threw a party, would you come? And we said, here's what the party would be about. And sure enough, on the appointed day and time, we had these 70 visionary leaders from around the community that participated, representing all of our health systems, our medical schools, our insurers, employers in the community. And it was really this core group of folks who contributed, have now literally contributed tens of thousands of hours to building this effort that we call the My Health Access Network. It's really been a fantastic experience because we were able to engage all levels of these organizations. You know, the bigger organizations get, the more levels there are in their hierarchy. And so we've had privacy and security folks involved to make sure that we strictly adhere to the laws of HIPAA and to honor patient rights. And we, of course, have patients engaged in that effort. We have technologists, healthcare information technologists, to help us solve the technology issues. But far and away, the more complex issues to solve are those about governance and how this information, once we begin to share it with each other, is governed. And we, of course, have engaged the patient in that effort. It's a really critical notion that patients need to understand, that as they are seen in the hospital, for example, that there are quite a number of records created about their health care. And up to this point, their physician has oftentimes not even been aware of what went on in their health. And all of us have had the rather unfortunate, I think, experience of visiting their primary care doctor after seeing a specialist or after being in the hospital, and their doctor says, so, tell me what happened. And they have to learn, you know, they have to recite chapter and verse everything that went on with them from a healthcare perspective. And that, of course, leaves lots of gaps in communication and in care. And so by having this wide range of special expertise involved in building this, that is from the privacy and security perspective, from the technical perspective, from the clinical perspective, obviously, we had the physicians engaged from the beginning, and then the governance perspective to really make sure that if we had one of our big health systems at the table, that the other big health systems were at the table as well, because this is one of those efforts that you simply cannot build without full participation.
And so once you were able to, in a sense, hold the diplomatic big tent and create a critical mass, it seems as though no one really wanted to be left out.
You know, in a way, that is true, although I will tell you that there are always conversations where we must fully justify the value of the MyHealth Project to our stakeholders. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's given it its greatest strength, is that we're always up for inspection by patients, by health systems, by employers, because this is a new kind of effort. And when we put it together, we said from the beginning, let's not just build something to have it. Let's make sure that it's valuable to the community. Let's make sure that the value proposition, if you will, is justified in our community, because it is a new thing. And so we think of this as a healthcare public utility. You know, it's as if we woke up one day and realized, you know, we don't have a water company or we don't have a power grid. But in this case, we woke up and realized we didn't have a way to securely move medical records from one place to another, which our patients expected were happening. It just wasn't. And further to that, we didn't have any way to help measure the quality of care that was being delivered so that patients could make good choices about where to go for care, so that employers could choose what providers and hospitals were the best to use in certain situations. These are all things that depend on all of us working together. And as a core component, we have to have this central public utility that supports these activities from a technical perspective.
So take me through the development of MyHealth. So it started really with this summit in 2008. What's the current status?
Well, the current status is that we have about 2.2 million patients in the network. We have over 1,800 physicians. We have in excess of 35 hospitals. We have the two largest commercial payers in the state of Oklahoma, as well as Medicaid and very soon Medicare participating. We have three or four of the largest corporations in Oklahoma now who've signed on to basically encourage their employees to be participants and be active with MyHealth. And so we've grown quite rapidly, actually. We began in an 11-county area around Tulsa, and we've grown rapidly to encompass the entire state and even working into Arkansas, Missouri, and Kansas at this point.
Wow. I mean, that's a tremendous story of growth. So who's paying the bills?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, early on when we started this work, we knew way back in 2009 that we needed this public utility to exist simply to, in healthcare, to continue to do our business as we needed to. The challenge was, how do we fund such a thing? And in the true spirit of a public utility, we adopted the mantra that MyHealth would only do the things that none of our participants did themselves. So we don't lay hands on patients. We don't provide patient care. We make connections and we move information and communications to make healthcare delivery more effective and efficient. In that vein, then, we needed a very thin staff to do what we wanted to do. And so we began with that strategic plan. And at the conclusion of the strategic planning process, we filed for what was called then a Beacon Award. And that's a program that the Office of National Coordinator in Washington put together, where they basically took a very small...
Office of National Coordinator for Health
For Health
Information.
IT.
Okay.
Absolutely. The Office of National Coordinator for Healthcare IT, which is under the Health and Human Services Department. And that program, you may have heard in the stimulus legislation, there was a significant amount of investment put into modernizing the healthcare system. And that doesn't mean buying new MRI scanners or the latest surgical technologies. That means getting the information technology up to speed. And so there were about $30 billion put into that effort. A very small $250 million segment of that effort, very small, was put into something called the Beacon Program. And under that program, basically, the Office of the National Coordinator was charged with choosing 15 initially, and then they added two more communities that had the right plan, that were moving in the right direction, and that could be looked to as a beacon in the future to guide the rest of the country in modernizing the healthcare system. And so, lo and behold, we filed an application, and Tulsa was chosen as one of the initial 15 beacon communities, which brought us a $12 million fund of money to build and launch this effort, which has been tremendously helpful. Essentially, it's been enabled us to take what was a 10-year strategic plan and compress it down to 2.5 years to get our technology and infrastructure and programs out into the community.
Gosh, that really is an amazing in terms of the time. So the stimulus, as it were, the Beacon Grant allowed you to really amounted to seed funding to get you going. And then do the stakeholders pay some kind of fee to contribute? How does that work?
Well, so the day we got the Beacon Award, I was speaking with one of our major stakeholders and let them know, and they said, great, now you can start thinking how you're going to sustain this thing afterwards. And so sustainability has been on our mind from the beginning, as it must be in any going concern. We're a nonprofit organization. We have no need to make a profit margin, and you know, we're governed by the stakeholders in this community, including patients. And so with that in mind, we needed to come up with a funding mechanism that was fair to everyone, and at the same time didn't show any favoritism in one direction or another. And so we really leaned on the public utility model quite a bit and said, you know, this should be paid for by those who use it, those who get value from it. And so our model is that physicians pay a certain monthly fee to be participants. Hospitals pay a certain amount annually based on the size of their hospital, the number of beds, and the amount of care they deliver. Nursing homes, home health agencies, pay according to the amount of staff or beds they have. And so we've made it a very, very fair model, we think, because we've been able to sell quite a bit of the models of these licenses. And what I think is really interesting about it is our covenant with the stakeholders in the community, and really the state now, are that our budget runs about $2 million a year for everything we do. And when we hit that budget every year, then we can give discounts back to our community, just like the power company would give discounts back if the price of gas is lower than they expected. And so that really is a covenant that we honor with our stakeholders, and I think it's made everyone more comfortable that this thing isn't going to grow out of hand, isn't going to get out of control, but instead will remain a steady support, piece of supporting infrastructure in the community for many years to come.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today is David Kendrick, an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the OU School of Community Medicine. He's also the CEO of My Health Access Network, and he's been telling us about how this was put together by a series of stakeholders. And I'm kind of intrigued. I mean, you're a doctor. How did you put this incredible network together of so many hospitals, doctors, insurance companies? How do you find the time? And I guess, where do you get the training for something like this?
You know, it's interesting that the time I was blessed, first of all, when I returned to Tulsa and to Oklahoma in 2008.
You grew up here.
I grew up in Duncan, and my wife and I went away for training for nearly 10 years and then returned to Oklahoma in 2008 to join the School of Community Medicine effort. And I was blessed by receiving a Kaiser chair there, which protected my time to do this kind of work. And so the very first thing I wanted to do in, upon arrival was to begin the process of getting this information together. I had trained in my training, as you mentioned, is internal medicine, pediatrics is my clinical specialty. But I trained in something called medical informatics, which is a bit of a mashup between engineering and healthcare in terms of systems analysis and thinking, but also using technology, leveraging technology to improve those systems. But also a mashup, I did a public health training as well, and that brought an interesting overlay of, well, how can we leverage the technology and the systems thinking, that is, how does one piece of healthcare connect to another to make it more efficient? How do we bring that to the table to actually improve the health of an entire community? Which it turns out was exactly what the mission of the School of Community Medicine was, and made it the perfect place for me to land. And so I've been blessed with a protected time there to work on this effort. But I will also say I've been blessed with a fantastic team. Joe Walker, Ryan Campbell, Chuck Tryon, these guys all on my team, too many now to name, have been phenomenal at putting this effort together. And further to that, the stakeholders have put in a significant amount of time from each of the health systems, St. John's, St. Francis, Hillcrest, OSU, OSU Medical School, OU Medical School, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Community Care, all of these organizations have put a lot of effort into helping to make sure that this community effort got off the ground and became something we could be proud of.
I find it totally compelling that so many different stakeholders have engaged in, and I mean, I don't mean to be cynical, but I guess where there is a profit motive, but it heartens me to think that all of these people do want to put patient care first and share information where it can be shared. And I wonder if, I gave the example of Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones, Dr. Smith who had an electronic medical record and who participated in MyHealth, but Dr. Jones was a little more skeptical. Now, you mentioned that based on the size of the user of the utility, that is the size of the hospital or nursing home, so a single a solo practitioner, of which there are fewer and fewer nowadays, but where's the value proposition for Dr. Jones, who's a little more skeptical? What's he going to get out? Why would he want to spend or pay a subscription fee to MyHealth if that's going to cost his bottom line?
The way our model works is to, as you say, make sure that everybody pays for the value they get. That means we've gone out to assess what that value would be. We spent quite a bit of time with providers, with hospitals, saying, what would you use this for? What do you need to get out of it? And it turns out with individual providers, one of the most compelling moments is when they are seeing a patient and they learn from the patient that they were in the hospital across town, or that they recently had an emergency room visit, or that they'd seen a specialist. But the patient couldn't quite remember all the medicines they were on, or they weren't sure what was done, but there was some procedure planned or something that was to be done. And that doctor simply can log in and say, hey, let's pull up your record in MyHealth and let's see what the discharge summary said. And they can actually pull the record from the hospital right there with the patient sitting in the room and educate the patient on what it meant, what the plan is going to be from here, and make a higher quality plan for this patient's health going forward. That's a really compelling moment for a provider, because I think, you know, as a provider yourself, you recognize that, you know, one of the most disheartening things in the world is taking time with a patient, you know, who we've trained to take care of all of our careers. We've invested the time to read untold numbers of boring textbooks and to try to apply those in practice, and then to spend many years in training with actual hands-on patient care, and then to have that patient come into the clinic that we just can't seem to help. We just can't seem to get ahead of their problem because there are so many others involved in their care that there's no hope to coordinate that care at all. And that's really what I think is most compelling for the individual provider, because if you're in business seeing patients today, there's enough unfun to that. That is the paperwork, the billing, the keeping the lights on. There's enough unfun in there that if you don't really love practicing medicine, you're not going to be in it very long. And for those who really love practicing medicine, to have access to the records they need at the right time to help the patient who's sitting in front of them, it's a game-changing event. It really is. And so those physicians are, at least in the experience we've had today, more than happy to pick up their share of the cost of such a network.
But I should also point out that that patient may have gone to a hospital to which Dr. Jones does not admit or does not have admitting privileges. So Dr. Jones can now, through MyHealth, look at that information, even though he wouldn't, for example, be able to go over to the local hospital or be able to get records without a release of information and faxing a document. I mean, it would be very cumbersome. And the other thing I think that's extremely powerful is with the subscription, And tell me if I have this, if I understand this correctly. Dr. Jones is able to, in a sense, look at his panel, that is all of his patients together, and pick out attributes like who are the patients that are diabetic and how well am I controlling their diabetes, or who are the patients that have high blood pressure and how many of them do I have on the appropriate medication. Doesn't the MyHealth system allow for that type of analytics?
It does support advanced analytics. I think that's something that differentiates what we've done at MyHealth from other efforts that have gone on in the country. There's a large network around Cincinnati called the HealthBridge Project. There's one in Grand Junction, Colorado. That's a fantastic network. But I would say that among all of the networks I'm familiar with, the MyHealth network is distinguished in several ways, but one primarily is that we've built in some pretty advanced analytic tools to help doctors at the point of care deliver more effective care to patients. Let me give you an example. So in many healthcare systems, if you think back to the days of a paper chart, some patients would have charts that were several phone books thick. A really sick patient might have lots and lots of information written on paper in those charts. Now imagine your bank working that way. If your bank was keeping your transactions in a paper ledger and on the table, would you be very confident in that? I mean, you'd have some real concerns about that bank today. And that's really where we are in healthcare now, is we've spent the last decade or two getting information off of those paper charts and into an electronic form. But that's not the end game. The end game is not having those records in a digital space so that they can be looked at more conveniently. The most important thing we can do with that data is the same kind of thing that banks do, that NASA does with data, that others do, and that is, let's try and find situations where people aren't getting care that need the care, where patients, maybe are sitting at home watching television and have no idea that their risk of a stroke or heart attack in the next 5 years is 40%. And those patients are out there. The reason our health outcomes in this community are so poor is simply because, in part because of patients getting discoordinated care when they go to the hospitals or the doctors. But the larger portion, I think, of bad health in our community is people who aren't even aware of their risk. And they may only appear in the healthcare system with a random emergency room visit 6 months ago, or they've gone to an urgent care for a cold. And it just so happens that in two or three subsequent urgent care visits, they had high blood pressure all three times. Wouldn't it be great if their primary care doctor knew that they had high blood pressure all those times and could get them a note to say, hey, you've got high blood pressure, why don't you come see me, we'll do a full checkup, and we'll get you on the path towards better health. Because everybody wants to live to see their kids grow up and graduate from high school and maybe college and have grandkids of their own. Nobody wants this early death and early morbidity that we have in this community. So this is our best shot, I think, to get ahead of the game, and that is once the data is together, then we can provide patients with a customized look, a tailored look at their own risk based on 40 or 50 or 60 variables about their own health condition, how much they exercise, whether they smoke or not, what medicines they take, what family history they have. All of these things go together to give us a number that we can actually use to help predict whether heart attacks or strokes or breast cancer, lung or colon cancer are going to happen. And so that really is the power of bringing analytics to layer on top of this information. Now, these analytics, just like the data itself, belong to the patients. So patients need to come to us, to their doctors, to seek out that information. But when they go visit a MyHealth doctor, they should be able to get this kind of information.
Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. David Kendrick is Associate Professor of Medicine and Pediatrics at the OU School of Community Medicine and CEO of MyHealth Access Network. That's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. If you've missed a recent show, you can listen to them anytime by going to our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Just click on the Studio Tulsa link and you can search the archives. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.